What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, January 15th, 2024, and this week's episode, Big Fights Inbound in 2024. We'll talk about this past Saturday's UFC event, the first of the year, UFC Vegas 84 and the fight between Magomed Ankalaev and Johnny Walker. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news, more boxing for Francis Ngannou, more fights for UFC 300, and big names just throughout the first quarter of the year. And we'll cap it off by talking about this coming Saturday's UFC pay-per-view. Sean Strickland taking on Dricus du Plessis, and Mayra Buena Silva taking on Raquel Pennington for the vacant bantamweight title. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. MLK today. Some people have the day off, some people don't, but we're on it, right? Lots of MMA to talk about. How are you doing?
Personally, one great holiday. It reminds you that the holidays don't have to be over, if I'm being honest. But then two, you know what? Good day to just kick it and talk about our favorite things like mixed martial arts.
Yes,
so I'm
sir.
Good.
All right.
What about yourself? Been doing good? I know, obviously, now we are officially back in the thick of things. I think that's what I realized when I was breaking the show down. Like, oh, you know, we have to catch up on a lot. We have not been at work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, there was a lull, but it's a short lull. And, like, we're going into the end of the year, you know, 2023. There's a lot to talk about. We want to recap. Brand new year, you get 1 week off and then boom, it's just back in it. It's almost like the break never happened. And that's good. That means our sport, the sport that we love, is just chock full of good fights, good fighters, you know, important promotions. Like, it's a good thing, but it is surprising how fast it just goes right back to normal.
For having had zero fights actually happen, we have a lot of fights to talk about. I think that's...
Yeah.
That's always the ironic thing. I mean, because there's so much, let's get to it. The light heavyweight main event from this past Saturday at UFC Vegas 84, Johnny Walker, Magomed Ankalaev. Obviously, pretty much a rebooking after their fight ended very anticlimactically in October. And kick it off, Johnny Walker's doing really well. I think he's just trying to be aggressive. He's trying to give Magomed a lot of different looks. And Magomed... It reminded me a little bit of Pereira against Jiří Prochazka in November. He knows that Johnny's doing all this stuff, but he's just working on the basics and conserving energy. You know, he's attacking the calf. He's trying to not absorb too many direct hits, you know, nice high guard. And so they're kind of moving in this pattern. Magomed's not really taking too much. Johnny's moving a lot, but, you know, still has to be on the defensive. And then... get to that third round, and Magomed, it just felt like he was just slowly starting to, like, all right, I feel like I'm seeing more openings now. Connects with the right hand, just sits Johnny down, he kind of crumples to the cage. Johnny isn't out, but then really just, I know all of the punches in the cage are unapologetic, but really, just this unapologetic across the face just smashes Johnny's nose to pits. Just gets him out of there in that third round. What'd you think of that one?
Yeah, man, that was it was a brutal finish. It was a very interesting fight because Johnny Walker came out first round sort of trying to look like classic Johnny Walker, a little bit of bounciness, a little bit of, you know, unorthodox movement with the capoeira. I can't remember if that was at the end of one or two, but, and the spinning back fist, like, it made me a little nervous because I was like, you know, we don't want to see super silly Johnny Walker who was effective up to a certain point and then just started, you know, getting caught because of all his, you know, tricks and jumps and antics. So he was kind of trying to do 50-50 serious and a little bit of entertainment. But he didn't look great to me. He looked like a little bit like sloppy, a little bit out of shape. I know he's a big dude, but usually he's a little bit more cut. So I'm not surprised that by round two, the table started to turn. Ankalaev continued to stay focused, calm, and just stayed with the game plan. So secured the finish, And yeah, it was brutal, man. Knocked him down and then just went in for that vicious uppercut against, you know, head bouncing against the cage. Johnny Walker grabs his nose. I didn't see anything, you know, after the fact to check on what the nose looked like, but commentators thought it was broken. Certainly a lot of blood on the towel. So that's a big, big moment for Ankalaev because Johnny Walker's still a name, still a tough guy. His, you know, I wouldn't say his star is on the decline, but he's not putting out the performances that got him famous anymore, you know, for better or worse. Like, there was this sweet middle ground where he was effective and entertaining, but he couldn't put it together this time around.
I do want to give him credit. Johnny did have, I believe it was 3 straight victories going into the fight with Magomed last October.
Right.
So, you know, he was putting it together, but I think then to your point, athletic guy, dangerous guy, obviously just this, you know, full steam engine, I mean, behind him when he starts cracking you. And Magomed really, I think, handled the pressure really well. Obviously another headlining spot and looked great. You know, Johnny on the younger side in terms of athleticism. So all of that really came together, I thought, really well for Magomed to really make him shine. Johnny, you know, he kind of held the promotion up for the fight. You know, obviously he did more interviews. He's more accessible, you know. So I think that Magomed just kind of got to capitalize and kind of take that momentum, which really leads into, you know, the obvious question, what do we do with Magomed Ankalaev? I said it before, you know, the fight, I think we kind of discussed it. If Jamahal Hill is ready when the UFC needs him, they're just going to make the fight with Alex Pereira and Jamahal. That's the priority. If Jamahal still needs time to recover, they'll just go straight up Pereira, Magomed, and Ankalaev. Because once again, as we've seen, the UFC schedule takes precedent sometimes over the big fights.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, case in point with 300 and everything, you know, it's about spacing things out so you could sell as many shows, not necessarily let's hold off and wait, you know, until this fight is particularly made. If you had a Conor Khabib situation, I could see that. Respectfully, I don't know that Pereira versus Hill is that fight that kind of stops the UFC's plans and they hold
exactly.
For it. So
yeah, man.
I could see Ankalaev sneaking in. If Jamahal just needs more time for that ankle, I did hear on the broadcast that they said they talked to Jamahal and, you know, it's going. It's a process, right? But,
right.
You know, let's real quick kind of look at the crystal ball. Unless they really need Pereira in April for 300, which respectfully, I just am not getting the feeling that Pereira's the guy they're going to put at the top of that one. Then you got to think it's possible they need him in May. In which case, that feels like enough time for Magomed to make the turnaround. That could be just enough time, depending on where Jamahal Hill is at, to be ready. But, you know, if we're talking about May, June, you know, now that starts to become really where is Jamahal Hill. So that could be what we see. But, yeah, if they need Pereira sooner, my prediction is they're going to go Magomed. If they don't, if they have other plans, then it's very likely that Jamahal Hill will still get to keep his spot and fight Pereira.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I have a question on this one. Khalil Roundtree, after that win over Anthony Smith, if Magomed needs to fight someone else, do you think that's too much of a step back, or do you think Roundtree is making enough noise to get that matchup?
No, to the former, I think it's too much of a step back. Magomed just did something really awesome, big, spectacular finish. I think the man needs to only look ahead. So yeah, I wouldn't want that matchup if I were him. Of course, it's a boon for Roundtree, but not for Magomed.
I would argue it is a very fun fight. You know, just with the way Roundtree performs. My one thing about it is that okay, Magomed just fought. We don't have the title fight booked. So let's say hypothetically, for whatever reason, Pereira doesn't fight till June, July, like in that neighborhood. All right, well then, if you're fighting for the title shot next, how long do we gotta wait for the winner of Pereira Hill? Going, you know, are we talking late 24? Could we see like next February? I mean, that's 12 months, you know what I mean? So that's why I would like to think of somebody else who could step in. And then also, like, You have Rakic and Prohashka fighting in April. Once again, I don't like the idea of Magomed waiting until, let's say, September, October to turn it back around sometime in that that time frame. So that's just how I feel. I don't want Magomed at this time when he's hot to just immediately go on ice, because I think that would be unfair. But I think the schedule may be working against him if he doesn't get it next. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
So, I just food for thought on that one. Before we move on to the fight announcements, Jim, I like to get money, so I have to monetize this. Sorry, Jim effing Miller. So subs Mowgli Benitez in the third round. Not only just says I'm ready for UFC 300. Practically drags Paul Felder by the neck like a dog out of retirement to say, we're doing this. And it looked like Paul Felder straight up was like, psh, I guess I'm not retired. I guess I'm fighting Jim Miller at UFC 300. What'd you think of how that all played out?
It was beautiful, a classic veteran move, right? You hear commentators always say, oh, veteran move in the cage, but that was a veteran move on the mic. He clearly thought about it. He clearly realized that with the win, he'd have a chance to get on this epic card, UFC 300, but it would have to be against the right opponent. He could get on there against just anybody, sure, but it would be, undercard, prelims. But if he picked the right guy, it could be something cool. And Paul Felder was the perfect call out because, Paul Felder has already shown that he's willing to step in on short notice as a fighter. He even did it as a corner man. And it was genius, actually. So I was really impressed with that. And I almost would say like 80% sure Paul Felder's gonna go fight him at UFC 300.
I will say this, Paul Felder, it was like he was kind of being realistic, like, guys, I already signed up for a marathon. I gotta get on. I'm doing acting, I'm about to be on TV. I can't be fighting Jim Miller. But in the moment, it was like you could tell on the look on his face, it's like, well, I guess I'm fighting Jim Miller at UFC 300.
It's a chance to be at UFC 300, like,
Here's the thing. I think Paul knows that it's like, could it get better than this? No, but I think he's also realistic. I think he was more 60-40. I had a good run already. I already made peace with the fact that it's over, right? So I think that's something to acknowledge. I wouldn't mind all-time win leader against all-time knockout leader Matt Brown. That makes for a fun matchup too.
For Jim Miller?
I mean, hey, look, personally, I would say, Jim, I think you're better at 55. Matt Brown is still big and strong at
Yeah,
170.
that's a tough one.
But you know what, man? If that's how he wants to go out, let's be real. There is a good chance Jim Miller says that's a wrap at 300. He could, don't get me wrong, he could go for more, but once again, does it ever get any better than this? So, yeah, look, he fought at 100, 200. I hope he has the safest camp for anybody. And if he opens the show at 300, I'm good. Let's go. So, I'm good with that. Look, good stuff. Obviously, some finishes on the undercard. So, for the first fight of 2024, first card of major MMA, perfectly great. Loved it. Natalie, because we took 2 weeks off, the UFC world decided you're gonna pay for it. So they announced just about everything under the sun. So let's get right into it. The biggest news: Francis Ngannou is gonna box Anthony Joshua on March 8th, so the night before UFC 299 in Miami. Once again, in Dubai, Ngannou was a little mum about, well, what does this mean for MMA in 2024? But he did mention, look, they could set me up with the rematch with Anthony Joshua. And then, here we are. We just pushed back the MMA debut. Anthony Joshua, if we're being honest, he's kind of enjoying a really good moment and probably a golden opportunity. He's got the fight with Ngannou. He wins. He most likely could set up a fight with Tyson Fury if Fury defeats Usyk. If he really wants that third shot at Usyk, he would be in a great position to argue for it, even though I don't know the fans, the casual fan, is necessarily interested in the third one. So it makes for a good fight. And then obviously this comes together because Deontay Wilder did take that loss on like Christmas Eve. So now this has opened up a new realm of possibilities. So a lot of pieces moving. What are your thoughts on everything?
Man, just joy was my first thought for Francis Ngannou. Like, way to go, man, you're killing it. We're just talking about how, you finally got one, got us a win for MMA against boxing. What's he gonna do next? There were the Deontay Wilder, mixed rules rumors, and is he gonna go back to PFL? But I think we both kind of felt like you gotta continue the momentum in boxing before you go back to MMA. And so this was it wasn't unexpected that he would choose boxing again for his next fight, but the opponent really was unexpected. And it all just fell together perfectly, right? This Day of Reckoning event. It was like, basically already in writing that Joshua beats his opponent, Deontay beats his opponent, and they fight. And it didn't freaking work out that way. And if you heard Ngannou on Helwani's podcast, he's like, when I saw that, I just, sent out a tweet and then just waited to see what would happen. I mean, it was pretty darn easy. What's Anthony Joshua thinking? Like, does he think this is an easy win for me? Or, I guess what I'm wondering is after his win at Day of Reckoning, he had options in the strictly boxing world. To pick Francis Ngannou does guarantee eyeballs, a lot of money. It's a risk though, because we saw what Ngannou did with Tyson Fury. It's also a risk because if you beat him, what does that say? Like, okay, well, you beat the MMA guy, great. Or does it say you beat a legit heavyweight boxer? I don't know, right? We still need to see how Francis Ngannou looks that night. But overall, very excited for Ngannou. It's a big, big win for him. He already showed up against Fury. He's going to take this even more seriously. So it's going to be crazy. I didn't actually put two and two together that it was right before 299, you said. So, I'm gonna need those
Buffalo
links.
Wild
I'm gonna
Wings.
need those links, Double G.
Buffalo Wild
Buffalo
Wings
Wild
right
Wings,
there.
correct.
Let's
I'm gonna
it's
need the
like
map link to Buffalo Wild Wings. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Google Maps, I got you. There's
Yeah.
got I bet you there's like four within like 15 minutes of
No,
you. Let's be real.
there's one 10 minutes away from
Yeah, there
me.
you go. All right, so some brass tacks to kind of get through. First off, once again, secure the bag. He did it again.
Oh, yeah.
Very happy. I heard, what was it, like 40 million guaranteed before pay-per-view, a cut of the pay-per-view.
Dude.
Bless up. Great for Francis. I can't say more. For Joshua, like he kind of sets it up. He gets probably what you would consider, quote, a favorable matchup. And then to help his cause, the element of surprise is gone. Now people know what Ngannou can do strictly
Right.
in boxing. So he has a lot of tape he could work with to kind of give himself a baseline to prepare for, not just the unknown of, how does this MMA guy do when he's not worried about kicks and wrestling? So all that sets it up. Obviously, look, I mean, as much as I know the Middle East is throwing money, I still feel like the production would be out of this world for Fury Joshua, the Battle of Britain, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That being said, I get it. If it's promised to the Middle East and Dubai, let's go. But I've always felt like there's a certain, obviously there's a lot of bragging rights between Fury and Joshua. Now, that is a big if. Obviously, Usyk is no joke. Usyk has technically more belts than Fury. He isn't the one who personally collected them all, but he is the one who beat the guy who did. So
Yeah.
all that is a caveat. Usyk could easily beat Fury, and that's the end of that. Now, to talk about a little bit of the business side. So this is great for Ngannou. If he sets up the rematch with Fury, that's obviously who wouldn't take that? Big money, more interest. Clearly, the powers that be are very invested in seeing that again, potentially. Just the same way being able to host Fury Joshua is huge. Let's talk about MMA. And first off, we said it. If he gets a big fight in April, he probably wouldn't fight until the winter, late fall in mixed martial arts again for PFL. Now, you talk about this. if Fury wins and Ngannou were to win, you have this possibility that Ngannou could get the Fury rematch, and then that's it for talking about MMA in 2024.
Yeah.
What do you think about it? So that's a lot of ifs. Obviously, Anthony Joshua is no joke, so I'm not gonna write it off. But let me ask you this question. The opportunities are coming in boxing. Do you think we will still see Francis Ngannou fight again in MMA? And I'm gonna give you one last point before I toss it to you. Ngannou is 37 years old. He'll be 38 this year. That's a big factor when you talk about the age. I'm not saying he's a bantamweight. Over 35, you don't win titles, but you know, spring chicken, he is not.
He is not, and I'm not really worried about it. PFL could be worried about it. I don't know contractually what happens if Ngannou, let's just say, never fulfills his obligation to fight in the smart cage, because the PFL president, what's his name, Don Davis, is that his
Yes.
name? He's very vocal about being all about the fighter and wanting to make sure that the fans and the fighters get what they want. And there's, man, if he's a smart man, just a regular combat sports fan, you would know that you can't derail the train, the momentum that Ngannou's building in boxing. So should he beat Joshua, do you want to be the guy that comes in and says, "Stop. I'm going to make you fight in the cage and retrain your brain back to MMA before you collect more money and more fame and legendary, enhance your legendary status and go fight rematch Tyson Fury." I mean, from a business perspective, that's a fair move. But I don't know. I don't know the man well enough, just from interviews and stuff, to know if that's something he would do, or if Ngannou might say, he's a very honorable man. He might say, "I already did my boxing. I owe PFL a fight. I'm going to honor that contract, that deal, and go back to the cage. Tyson Fury, you have to wait." That's also entirely possible, but it's definitely a tricky situation. It's a good problem to have, right? Lots of people want to give you money to fight, but they are very different styles, and you can't jump back and forth without, like willy-nilly. You gotta give yourself some time to go
Yeah,
back to
at some
MMA.
point there's a diminishing return on your skills.
Yeah,
It's just
exactly.
the
Especially,
sharpness, especially at that level. He's
yeah.
not fighting scrubs. He's gonna fight a person who they deem is worthy to get have a fight with Francis Ngannou. Still, the linear hasn't lost an MMA since defending the UFC title. So I've heard many things about this, and there's certainly very valid theories that like, you know, Francis Ngannou is never going to fight MMA. That, you know, if boxing starts to show him love, that he's going to treat PFL like the, you know, the other woman, not the main woman in his
Right, the
relationships,
side
right?
piece. Yep.
Yes. And you know what? Here's what we talk, and I brought it up last year. Had the Fury deal fallen through, had it just not materialized for him, he would be in MMA tomorrow. He would be in MMA this year because, you know, like that was always the case, right? Maybe you get a boxing fight, but if it's not a Fury Joshua Wilder, let's be real. You kind of like, what was the whole point of leaving, you know, the machine of the UFC and the money
Right.
of Jon Jones, right? Now, it worked out for him. We've been over this. He was offered a great deal. He's been offered a very life-changing deal from PFL, not even in the cage. The one thing I would say about this now is that it starts to become how many opportunities are immediate for Francis. And I'll say it right now. If Joshua wins, maybe he doesn't fight this year, but he gives PFL their fight early next year. And
Right.
maybe that's a wrap for MMA. And he feels, look, I beat Stipe, I beat Cain, I beat Cyril, I beat JDS, I beat Rosenstrike. You know, he
Yeah.
beat, you know, so many top heavyweights in UFC that it's like I got nothing more to prove. So I think when you look at this, you do consider it from Francis Ngannou. If this happens, then maybe there's the chance for one more. If he gets a rematch with Tyson Fury, like if he beats Joshua and he gets to fight Fury, straight up, I don't know that we actually see him back in boxing. Back in MMA.
Right.
Because it worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
But if he loses to Joshua, I could see a scenario where he gives him that one send-off. He kind of honors his end and he gives PFL, even if not late this year, maybe early next year, he gives him that big fight, full camp, and just, you know, says, hey, it's been a good ride. I'm going to keep doing business, but I'm going to maybe chase another payday in boxing and then I'm going to call it a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's worked out so immediate. Who would think in your first two professional boxing fights, you get to fight arguably the two biggest superstars of the heavyweight division, Fury and Joshua? I mean, there's only four guys that I would call superstars at heavyweight. He's fighting two of them back to back. The game has changed in terms of what kind of decisions he should make, especially from this time last year. So yeah, that's a lot of talking. Just to sum up and say, if Ngannou beats Joshua, I don't think he fights MMA. If he loses, I'm like 60-40, he gives PFL their one MMA fight against somebody.
Yeah,
and there we have it. Look, I mean, that's a great weekend of combat sports, so I'm already looking forward to March. We did get those long-awaited UFC 300 fight announcements. Not a main event, but this is a big one. Zhang Weili, Yan Shonan. Obviously, the Battle of China. Weili is riding three straight victories. Joanna getting the title from Carla, defending it last year against Amanda Lemos. Yan is riding back-to-back victories. Looked great against Mackenzie Dern. Stopped Jessica Andrade. And prior to that, you'll remember she had that great run. Kind of got a little shocked by Carla Esparza, but rebounded beautifully since then against top talent. So she's just looked really sharp. Here's what I'll assume. I know we were going to go to China in December. I'm assuming it's just not on the calendar for 24. So the second China is off the table, you immediately start thinking about adding that fight, which is great, to a big pay-per-view. And that's what they did. I don't hate it for 300. I think it's a great fight. I think they've both earned it. I think there's enough elements to it with their background and all that. Like, it's like they don't have anything personal against each other, but for some reason people feel like they should for some reason. So it's like, you know what? It's good. Two top strawweights, big for the international scene. Love it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a killer matchup. It's the one we wanted to see. And if you're talking about, you know, wanting to get as many eyeballs worldwide on your big, you know, landmark anniversary card, UFC 300, this is a good fight to add onto the lineup to help bring in eyeballs around the world.
Completely agree with you. And stylistically, should be a pretty banger matchup. They're very well-rounded, so looking forward to it. Also, I'm assuming this fight will be third from the top, and I don't hate it if that is the case. Charles Oliveira taking on Armin Sarukian. Obviously, Charles is coming off the win over Dariush about last June. Was supposed to fight Islam, suffered the cut, 8 days out, you remember. Armin Sarukian coming off a knockout of Beneil Dariush in the first round in December. Obviously, he's had a great run overall. His only UFC losses are to big names like Gamrot and Islam Makhachev. So he's on a great run going into this fight. We're going to talk a little bit about the Makhachev element because that was a surprise. I'm going to just say it bluntly. This is the kind of fight UFC 300 we wanted to see. Charles has a great following. Armin is very exciting and on his way up. It's a killer matchup. High stakes. Dana White said in the announcement, winner gets Islam Makhachev for the belt. When I think about the following of Charles Oliveira, how popular he is, I'm like, that's the kind of star you needed to put on 300. That should have been one of the first announcements. We got it now. I'm just very happy that a fight of that caliber is added, and it's not even the top fight on the card. I love it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a excuse me. Great matchup. This is one of those where the MMA math makes sense as you recap the records of both of these guys recently. So it all works out. Charles Oliveira gets to be at UFC 300, which I imagine is a huge victory for him. He's still trying to get that belt back. You know, my name is Charles Oliveira. I'm the king. I can't remember what his thing is. The
The
champion
champ
has a
has a
name.
name,
It's
yeah.
Charles Oliveira, right? So if he wins, this is going to be a mega platform for him to remind us of, you know, who he was not that long ago and what he plans to do. So I like it a lot. Very excited.
By the way, very gangster. Obviously, he could have tried to play a bit of the waiting game. Armin is no joke. And I think that's a huge feather in the cap for both men, whoever wins this one, to get the victory. So I think it was very, it speaks to the gamesmanship of Charles that he took the fight. Let's talk about Islam Makhachev. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter or in social media, but he did say, hey, how about I headline what I believe would be like a 302, something like that, in June? Once again, keep in mind Ramadan ends like a week before 300, and I think that kind of speaks to okay, now how would he like the timetable for a full camp is what I mean. So June kind of tracks pretty well right there. His manager, Ali Abdelaziz, who's obviously very connected, as we know, and very finger on the pulse of what's actually going on behind the scenes, said that Islam actually wasn't hurt and said that, it was just the UFC just made their business decision to have Sean O'Malley and Chito headline Miami instead of Islam, as had been talked about. So, one thing I would say about this, and I always hate to do it because I love Charles, but at the same time, I've always felt that Islam versus Gaethje was the fight. I felt like when Gaethje beat Poirier, he set it up for October. I get it. They'd already committed to Charles and Islam. All right, it is what it is. But now that the game had kind of changed a bit, I always felt like this is the more marquee fight. Respectfully, we saw a very one-sided Charles versus Islam. Charles has only fought once, Islam's fought twice. I just felt like there isn't enough heat yet for the rematch for Charles versus Islam. So this kind of sets it up. While I would hate it because I get it, they're guaranteed a title shot, I would prefer to know that Charles versus Armin fights a winner of Islam versus Gaethje, who fight in the early summer. And then put it this way, if Islam fights in June, he could probably turn it around for the annual Abu Dhabi card in October. So I want to see Islam Gaethje in June. If Islam wins, he's still good. Even if he loses, he's still good for Abu Dhabi in October. And I think that sets up the calendar perfectly. What about you?
It works out, man. You should get a job at the UFC matchmaking office over there.
I know, I should
You
have
have
signed up
to.
for that contest they did, huh?
Yes,
Got great
that's right.
ideas, I'm
I
telling you.
know. Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. And yeah, the thing with Charles taking this fight, and I know we're going to talk about Dustin in a second too. Both of those guys could have said no to these opponents that they got matched up with. But, you know, I think it's a matter of wanting to remind everybody they're still at the top. They're not gatekeepers, not even close. And they're going to prove it by taking these fights and, you know, just sending these guys back to the end of the line. That's the feeling I got when I found out about both Charles and Dustin's fights, because, yeah, you know, they could have been like, no, I'm top five fighter. I've fought for the belt. I don't want to fight these guys. But, you know, you lose to the wrong guy at the wrong time, and you kind of have to either sit on your hands or eat crow and take on a fight of a lower ranked opponent. And if you are the guy you say you are, then it should be no problem. So we'll see with Oliveira. We'll see with Dustin. And yeah, of course, Islam Gaethje, you set it up perfectly. That would be, I mean, I don't need to say anymore. Go get your paycheck over there.
Pay the
Go
cost
collect your money.
to be the boss, right? Love it. So, yeah, I mean, look, also Armin, the growth in his game, if he beats Charles and he gets a rematch with Islam for the title or fights a Gaethje, that's a fun fight. Look at the way he's been performing. That could be fun. Like you said, I appreciate the vets like Charles and Dustin being very gangster and stepping up. You know they could have played the game. I appreciate that in this time they took the opportunity. I think it just makes for great things all around. And yeah, like I said, my perfect scenario, Islam fights, Charles and Armin fight the winner of Islam Gaethje. And I think fans are the ones that win. The belt keeps active. The guys aren't screwed over. They're on a great timetable. That's my hope, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Talking about, I mean, you kind of touched on it. I mean, just straight up for $299, five rounder. I'm not gonna lie. I put this as UFC 300. If they keep stacking it, all right, I'll settle for it. I'm okay with you moving it to Miami. Poirier, St. Denis. Obviously, St. Denis is coming off that knockout of Matt Frivola. He's been on a roll. He's one of the top up-and-comers at 55, too. Poirier, what else can you say? Veteran, big name, very popular guy, very exciting guy. The fact that they put these guys for 25 minutes, take my money. Obviously, like we touched on, huge moment for Poirier to turn back a young up-and-comer. For St. Denis, this is the kind of victory that sets you up for those fights with the Charles and the Gaethjes and, yes, eventually the Islams of the division. So, high stakes, stylistic banger, take my money now.
Yeah, for sure. All of that, you know, ditto. But, yeah, to your point about 299 versus 300, they must have something in the pocket for 300, right? Like, what are they going to do? Because they're really putting in a lot of eggs in the 299 basket that would have looked pretty good at the in the 300 basket. You know what I mean? So who do you think is going to be the big ticket item in 300? I don't know, man.
Oh.
Diaz, Connor? I don't know.
JFC, if you're young enough to know what words I'm saying. So I saw this, like, the graphic. I think they said something like in the neighborhood of 13 out of 18 fighters announced for 299 are all ranked. What do we do at 300? So here's my thing I want to add. There's about five or six fights right now that have been announced for 300. Objectively, they're all bangers. They're all great. Even, like, if you consider who's, like, the biggest name on the lowest fight, Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel was on his pay-per-view last time and looked fantastic. If Bo Nickel were to open up 300, that sets up a huge card. Now, I get it. Fans have been promised the bag of goods. And to be quite blunt, Dana White has to get on Instagram and announce another six straight bangers to be on par with 299, because 299 has set the bar so high. Mm-hmm. Every fight that has been announced for 300 has been amazing. So on the one hand, I get it. People are like, can you actually keep this up? They haven't fallen off yet. So my short answer, let's wait and see. Now, what is the big, you know, the golden egg from the golden goose kind of deal?
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I think you could still keep it on the table that they change plans and Connor does make it onto 300. Even with an amazing undercard, I think there's something to be said that Leon and Bilal just isn't big enough.
Sure.
I just, I'll leave the short answer. I really don't know. I think that I'll throw this out there. I know Chael Sonnen has said it, and I'm like, 60-40, it doesn't happen, but Israel Adesanya at the top of 300? I mean, if we have a scenario where he fights a Strickland or Dracus there, okay. I don't know. I mean, that's a big if. Camp, injuries, fight, injuries, I get it. But all of these things together, I'll leave it, I don't know. But it feels like they could stack 300 undercard, but short of moving Connor onto it, I don't know what you could do that feels more massive than 299, because 299 is just ridiculous as in itself. 300 needs another six bangers to outdo it as the event. So I don't know. That's my only answer.
Yeah. But nobody knows.
I want to point this out. Fans, I think, are panicking, like, bruh, he keeps announcing banger after banger. I think just people want that main event, so they have that peace of mind. And then, oh, and who else is fighting? And who else is fighting? The fact that he's holding on the main event, I think it's having like a reverse effect in that, you know, the fights are good, but they're like, where's the main event, Dana?
Right. You say, like, golden egg, and that's it. That's what we're waiting for.
Like, you know, you bring in the biscuits and the gravy, and I'm like, how nice is the turkey? Like, if you have all the sides, but the turkey looks like it's been burnt to a crisp on the sun, it doesn't, you know.
Where's the
I
beef? That's what
think
I'm talking
that
about.
that's what is happening with the fans. He's announced like five straight bangers, so it's like,
Yeah, of
guy.
course.
But I think they expected, oh, the anticipation is gonna build, and instead people are giving them a hard time, and it's like, there's no reason to panic yet. He's given us great fights, but I get it.
No, yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm panicking, but I'm like looking around, like, are you guys seeing this? Like, am I the only one who's wondering when this is gonna get good? And again, I hear you. I'm looking at it on paper. It is a good fight card for any other regular pay-per-view. But I'm talking like,
You want that centerpiece and then it's more epic, right? That's what
yeah.
everyone's feeling. I get it. I get it. But it's like, I'm with you there too. Well, what are you saving for 300? I think plans could change, but yeah. At this point, my front runners are Adesanya or they move Conor and Chandler after all. Because you'll notice, and he's going to get asked about this within 7 days, is Conor and Chandler actually International Fight Week? Because you notice, even though everyone's taking it as gospel, UFC has yet to put out any sort of graphic suggesting that is actually the case.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
I'm sure they had conversations. I mean, look, I don't think it was a secret that Conor wanted 300. I think he said as much, right? Somewhere. Yeah, so then there's rumors of Nate. Nate's probably like, "Yeah, I'll come back, but it's got to be 300. It's got to be the main event." And I'm sure that's what Conor wanted. So like the thing is though, that is those are two big names. I really do want to see Conor McGregor back in the cage. But that matchup itself is like, how good is it going to be? Really? These guys haven't fought in so long. And so now it's like, all right, I want the golden egg, but when I get it, is it going to be satisfying? I don't know.
I mean, that once again, I think it's a very what's it called? Wait and see. I think here's the thing. I think we will have a answer within 2 weeks. And I say that
Two
because I
weeks,
think
okay.
here's what I think. I think that we're gonna see what happens with Sean and Dracus. How beat up are they from camp, from the fight? And so by not this Friday, next Friday, we'll probably have an estimation. Do you need time off? Do you need surgery? Can you stay, keep your weight low and fight in April? We're gonna find that out. And if so, I could see them throwing Adesanya back at a title fight for 300. And you get your superstar on the seminal event. That's what I think. And if that doesn't happen, you know what? Don't be surprised if you hear Dana say, guys, we got some changes. Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler. There you go.
It's so you think it's more likely that they're moving McGregor Chandler to 300 than that they're bringing in Nate out of retirement and putting him against Connor.
Absolutely.
Okay, got it.
I'll say this right now. With taking the way Connor talked about it, I just don't see them pivoting off Chandler anymore.
Yeah, okay.
I think if they were going to do that, they would have said it. Connor would have said it. Everyone would have stoked the flames. All the impressions I'm getting is that no, at the end of the day, this is Chandler's fight and they're giving it to him. So,
Yeah, that's fair.
yeah, I've now officially thrown in the towel on Connor Nate being coming out of left field.
Okay. I mean, he's booked anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes, we're about to talk about that.
I
Shoot.
forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean, let's get to a few of those things. Amir Albazi out on February 24th. Brandon Royval in. Obviously, Royval's coming off the five rounder with Pantoja. Moreno, first fight back from his July five rounder with Pantoja. Main event, Mexico City. Look, don't hate it. I'm a little concerned after the five rounder, like Royval being fresh enough. But look, if he's young and feeling fresh and feeling good, let's go. Still a fun fight. I will admit, if I'm Pantoja, I don't like this because it's like, well, now where's my title contender, you know? So I respect it. Obviously, you always were going to keep Moreno on the card. I think it would have been more epic giving Albazi an opportunity to potentially upset Moreno, and then you have fresh blood at the top of flyweight because Pantoja's beating everybody already. So that's my only
Yeah.
thing about it. But stylistically, on the night, great fight. Battle of the Brandons. Let's go.
Yeah, that's right, but Brandon. Yeah, like, I mean, you got to keep Brandon Moreno in Mexico, and so they had to do what they had to do. But yeah, Pantoja's probably like, ah, yawn. Beat them both, great. And I think it is too soon for Royval. You know, even though at the lighter weights they seem to recover a little faster, but it's too soon. Five rounder straight to another five rounder, and in Mexico there's the elevation, all that stuff. But he's game, so let's do it.
There you go. One championship bringing two events to the United States in 24, September 6th and November 8th. Colorado and, oh my God, I wrote it down and I forgot. One in Colorado and I believe the other one is in like Atlanta or something.
Okay.
But the point is that two events in USA. I like it. I mean, I think one championship needs something to kind of re-inject momentum. I think that as you hear for the United States fans, you hear about, Demetrius maybe calling it a day. Obviously, a very popular and accessible star in Angela Lee stepping away. And, there's this now new, there's this turnover recently. And I don't know that enough fans from the West have gotten invested in the newer One Championship stars. So I hope that the promo and everything kind of helps to really keep them bridging the gap. I know they do fantastic in Asia with the Muay Thai and everything, but I know it's a great product. I think it's just about getting fans to connect with it. But once again, obviously, the market is so dominated with UFC, PFL stuff anymore. I get that it's like, man, I don't have time for one more MMA promotion, even though they really enjoy the fights. So I hope that the promo for it leads to more interest in one in 24 in the United States. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And they have a great product. It's just, yeah, it just gets lost in the mix from our, US perspective. And, I'm sure they'll have Mighty Mouse on there and do what they can. And so I am looking forward to it. I'm glad they're here. They're going to be here. They have pretty interesting, like marketing material that you see on social media where they, backstory on the fighters. And because it's mostly in Asia, there's like a lot of, from poverty to champion stories, and those are all very heartwarming and interesting. So they have material there to really pique our interest. So let's see what they do.
Yeah, I think that they do it well. It's just, once again, it's the market. I think there's something
Yeah.
to be said for the accessibility. People just don't go to Prime Video for MMA, even though a lot of people have it. So,
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just one of those things gaining traction. It's something they just struggle with, I think, consistently in 24 as they've had a turnover of stars. So, but look, I obviously more MMA, more high level MMA is always great for the market. So I hope it does do well because it would add just that, breath of fresh air in this, in the space.
Yeah.
The other big fight announcement, Jorge Masvidal versus Nate Diaz, sometime in March. Las Vegas is what has been thrown out there. Look, there's obviously companies that would be interested. Masvidal does have his own promotion, so you feel like that would be where they hold it, as opposed to giving it to like, a DAZN or like a Misfits, something like that. I think they'd keep the money in-house. I'll say this. Objectively, look, I like the two as personalities. I think they both have fight left in them. For this particular matchup in boxing, don't hate it. One thing I will say is that, like, I feel like this really tilts it in favor of Masvidal. Because now, he had the size advantage against Nate before. Now you don't even have to worry about this guy's jiu-jitsu, which is arguably the best weapon in his entire game for Nate Diaz. So
Yeah.
I just found it very interesting. Don't hate it. Is it? It's new and it's different. It's almost like it's similar and it's different at the same time. So I like
Yeah.
that new element for this. Don't hate it. What about you?
At first I was excited, like my knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, they're gonna fight. And I was like, okay, wait. When they fought in the cage, Masvidal beat Nate pretty handily. I was very surprised by how easily he was able to, hold him up against the cage and just beat him. Didn't expect that. Of course, there's a little bit of a size difference there. And yeah, no more jiu-jitsu, just good old fisticuffs, which is Jorge Masvidal's, you know, that's his bread and butter. They always talk about Nate Diaz's boxing and how it's so great, but didn't even look good against Jake Paul. So, of course, younger, bigger man. However, Jorge Masvidal, despite not being a spring chicken, is still a much better boxer than Nate Diaz. So, yeah, I don't hate it, but I just feel like it's going to be kind of a one-sided event. The lead-up will probably be more exciting than the actual fight itself. Although, as I say that out loud, like, these two guys are very respectful of each other. They don't talk smack to each other. So maybe that even that won't be very exciting. They're just going to kind of be like, yeah, we're going to do the best. We're going to fight each other. It's going to be a war. And that's it. So I'll watch it. There's going to be some fun moments, but I'm not, like, supremely stoked about it, put it that way.
I mean, I don't know if we're going to get Hagler Hearns out of this, right? But I would argue I would argue they're still going to have a decent enough fight with a good build-up. I just think they get it, and their personalities that work against each other. Something to be said, it's sometimes tough because it's like, it doesn't feel like BMF Part 2 as much as it should. I don't know, I'll leave it at this. Like, they both still have gas in the tank. They both want to make money, so I don't hate it. Let them have what they want, you know? So we'll go from there.
All right.
I think, depending on when they put it, by the way, Masvidal has committed to the last couple events from his promotion on YouTube. If he offers this no paywall, huge for the whole thing. He'll probably sell freaking 20-minute ads. I don't care. They could, you know, it could take 4 hours if we're getting Jorge Nate for free on YouTube. Leave it at that.
Yeah.
I want to hit you some breaking news before we get into the pay-per-view. So you'll remember the UFC was supposed to go to Saudi Arabia in March. Apparently, breaking news on Ariel Helwani's show right now, they are actually postponing it to a later date because they're not satisfied with the event that they're going to be putting on there.
Okay.
And I got to say, I want to just talk about it real quick so we could focus on the other stuff next week. I actually like this move because, one, I'll say this. I know that Saudi Arabia has their, like, commitment to PFL already. I know that we've talked about this several times. The money that they are throwing out there for sports is pretty monumental. And you already have a 298 and a 299, so the Saudi event was going to be a fight night, expectedly. I can understand if I'm Saudi Arabia and I send UFC this much money, I could see them like, what do you mean a fight night? Like, we should be having a pay-per-view. We should have a numbered, you know, one of these massive scope events like you do for Abu Dhabi. So I actually like that because I do think that while the UFC is very, you know, has a great relationship with Abu Dhabi, that if a entity like the Saudi Arabia Sports and Tourism Group is throwing that money out there, yeah, it probably should be a numbered event. And when they talked about Islam Makhachev, I was like, you're not putting Islam on a fight night, even if he's available. So I always figured they should have a pay-per-view, especially if we're talking about making it as big as everyone seemed to want to say. So that's my only two cents on it. Do you have anything to add about that breaking news?
No, you said it all.
All right, thank you then. I always feel awkward. It's like, you sure you don't want to say more? I took it all. Anyway,
if you nailed it, you nailed it.
Appreciate it. Let's talk about 297 doubleheader, two titles. Obviously, you know, undercard will see a good amount of Canadian talent in Toronto. Let's start with the women's bantamweights, Myra Buena Silva, Raquel Pennington. I'm happy for Raquel because I know she was feeling like, I swear, if they give this fight to Juliana Pena and someone else, it would just feel criminal. I'm glad that she got the fight after all. She was always going to be one half. Myra Buena Silva, I appreciate all the openness about the drug test and the ADHD. I know it turned over her victory over Holly Holm, but I think that the UFC and everyone involved is just giving her the credit for the victory.
Yeah.
As evidenced by the fact that they gave her this title fight, as opposed to, say, you know, rematch Ketlin, Vieira, and Raquel. So I appreciate it. I think Myra was always the top choice for it. Fun fight. I think Myra has a lot more of the momentum, more more explosive, more athletically dynamic, especially just what she was able to do against Holly. And obviously, she's put together a solid run now at bantamweight to kind of get that momentum. For Raquel, one of the things about it is that what she lacks in, like, that explosiveness and, like, you know, she's not out there, like, fast twitch, boom, boom, boom. However, she is very sound, well-rounded in all those disciplines. She knows how to stay out of trouble. She knows how to, you know, run the clock, wear you down. She just puts everything together really well, and what she makes, what she lacks in that explosiveness, she just makes up for in these very sound basics. And anyone will tell you the basics win more fights than anything else. So I think that that really sets up for an interesting matchup. I think that Myra has to, you know, Myra's going to have to really be very accurate if she's going to have something exciting against Raquel. Otherwise, Raquel could very easily start to run this clock and start running away with it over time the longer the fight goes, in my opinion. So, makes for a fun fight. What about you?
Yeah, I think that strategy is what we're going to see. Raquel's just going to use her veteran savvy to keep her distance, get points when she can, hold Myra up against the cage, knees to the midsection. You know, she has long arms. You know, good range. It not good enough, not like Amanda Nunes range and reach, but you know, next in line, I would say. You know, not a spring chicken, but still very game and still big, strong, and very capable, well-rounded, pretty much what you said there. So I expect her to just play the long game, go five rounds, try to win this by decision. I really hope she does it. You know, when Miesha Tate finally got her belt against Holly Holm, it was like amazing. It was a thing you thought maybe you weren't going to get to see because of how she kept losing to Ronda Rousey. So Raquel Pennington is one of those, you know, female fighters still from the old guard, tough back in the day. You know, she's still around, still a top contender, obviously here fighting for the belt. I would love to see her get that strap. And so my heart pick and my head pick is Raquel Pennington.
Yeah, one thing I would say, it does feel like it's now or never, right, to win the title for Raquel. Had some setbacks, really just, I mean, just kind of stayed the course, if I'm being honest. And I know that her fights haven't always been like, oh, marquee attractions. She's been one of the most consistent bantamweights in a division that has seen so much turnover. I mean, it's just been so hard for there to be a big amount of women who just break out at women's bantamweight. In terms of just the, you know, the post-Amanda Nunes era, I just want the promotion to also kind of get behind and like, hey, you know, just show them that respect, hype them up. I want to feel like, hey, this is as big a fight because I know, I get why they love Amanda so much. If it's a new chapter, well, let's just introduce it, right? You know, just like they do all the time. So I would want that for Raquel and Myra following this one. So I hope they do that. Yeah. You know what? I think that's kind of going to be the story of the fight. I know that it's very easy to get excited about someone who choked out a vet like Holly. I do think that Raquel's just going to come in super well prepared. She's going to make this fight physical. It may not be the prettiest performance, but I think she's just going to stay the course and just kind of outmaneuver Myra for 25 minutes for the victory.
Yeah.
She may have to get through the fire early, but I think over time she'll be able to get it done. I got Raquel winning too.
Okay. Wow.
And then, of course, our main event, Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland. I mean, going to start the fight in round two, apparently. So here's the thing.
That's right.
You know, I want to touch on this. Sean Strickland, we have gotten so used to Sean Strickland as a contender that I think it's been really, I think just from a outside perspective, been really refreshing to see how Sean Strickland deals with people taking shots at him.
Mm-hmm.
He's so used to being kind of like the guy poking at you, like the kid at the with the teacher. Mm-hmm. That now that he's at the front of the table and he's taking it, it's like okay, look, this is his first title defense, so it's not like there's this great, you know, wave of stuff, but like, this is the first time you see somebody irritate Strickland.
Yeah.
And look, I watched the whole thing with Theo Vaughn and all that, and I get where he was coming from. I also respectfully get why people felt like, wait, what about the things you've said and this and that? And it's like, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's very muddy because, you know, he does say a lot of stuff that, you know, does offend people, if we're being very blunt about it. That being said, as just a fight, I think that, okay, you know, whatever you felt, however you feel, insulted, disrespected from Drakus, similar to Leon Edwards, now it's about, okay, Sean, you are the champion. You're the one with the target on your back. How do you now handle this shift and be yourself, unflappable, executing the brilliant plans of, you know, the team led by Eric Nixick at the gym, and just get it done once again? And I think that's the true test, more so than any of the X's and O's about, you know, style and all that. So I think that's the big thing on any side. How do they handle it? Stylistically, Drakus, look, he's the guy who's finished the last several opponents. If you tell me this fight's going to end early, oh, probably because Drakus gets it done. Stylistically, because Sean is so technically sound, even if not, you know, kind of like I said with Raquel, he's not known for being this explosive, fast, twitchy guy. He is so well conditioned and so good at executing it that if this fight starts to go late and Drakus has spent some energy trying to get him out of there, I could see Sean Strickland running away with it in the later rounds.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this probably that's the most interesting part of the fight. How do they execute it to get to those places? Because I don't know that I favor Drakus in a 5-round fight. I favor him in a 3. I don't know that I favor him in a 5 with Strickland if he hasn't gotten him out of there. So makes for an interesting bout. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. As far as, you know, conditioning goes, Drakus is muscular, stocky. He's got those, he calls those like bull humps. I don't know what they call them. Those muscles in the back that like are basically touching his ears.
those shoulder muscles that feel like you've evolved as a human being.
Yeah, like the ones that Yoel Romero had that were like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Those. Who could forget?
I don't know what they're called. Anyway, he's very muscular. Sean Strickland, if you saw him at the beach, you'd never guess in a million years the man was, you know, middleweight champion.
Okay. In his defense, have you seen like, I don't know if you follow him, but like he posted a picture with Johnny Eblen. He's got like a freaking 8-pack right now in his defense. I'll give him that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, okay. Fair enough. But he just, you know, hairy chest. Well, you know, the way he talks, that scraggly voice. Looks like he's been, you know, at a concert. Sounds like he's been screaming at a heavy metal concert all night.
Yeah.
He just doesn't give you that, you know, oh, better watch out vibe. Like he's a fighter. Okay, doesn't matter. But they're very different physically, right? Okay. And in the cage, also very different. Sean Strickland with that Philly shell, just very smooth, slow moving as far as his footwork goes, right? He keeps his feet very close together considerably, compared to other fighters, MMA fighters. Not a lot of fast movement, smooth, very efficient. It's always surprising to me how effective he is in the cage because of how little he moves. And Drakus is a little more of a traditional MMA fighter. And so there are some advantages that he'll have, probably a little bit of blitzing forward, attack, looping punches coming from the sides. But Sean Strickland is so efficient with his movement, both his feet and his head movement, that I think he's going to be able to be an effective matador, similar to the way he was with Adesanya. And as you said, as far as cardio goes, yeah, I think Drakus is going to gas out because he's going to be trying. He's going to expect that he can blitz Sean and knock him out or, you know, TKO him early on. But after a while, he's going to realize that Sean Strickland doesn't get tired and he doesn't stop coming forward. So I expect Sean Strickland to win by decision, doing what he did to Izzy, basically, except this time against Dracus. And so it's going to be shocking to see, of all people, Sean Strickland defend his middleweight championship. But I think he is strangely just comprised of the most unique and subtle fighting techniques that are actually very effective. And we'll see it again on Saturday.
You know what? Oh my gosh, you pitch it so well, and then I always want to change my mind. You know what? I gotta be real with you. Since they announced it, I felt like Dracus got this one pretty well. I think so. Here's my thing about it. I think about, like, all right, what fighters have given Sean Strickland trouble? And for being, you know, I get it. We kind of said he kind of just used the basics to beat some people who are more dynamic, Adesanya being chief among them.
Yeah.
When I think about the guys that give Sean Strickland problems, Cannonier, Pereira, guys big, powerful, got that firepower that, quite bluntly, all your pretty little Philly shell stick and move nonsense, they just kind of smash the brick wall over, you know, over time. Now, look, Cannonier, the fight was very close. But I think a big part of that fight is the fact that Cannonier, look, that's a very powerful, you know, dude at middleweight. He's one of the, you know, as a physical specimen, one of the, you know, more athletically gifted guys at middleweight. Pereira, I mean, dude's just a tank. Moved up to 205, still a tank. Dracus, very big middleweight. If you've ever seen him weigh in and watch that, dude's a specimen himself. You know, plenty of muscles, bigger than Robert Whittaker, who's a pretty, you know, hefty middleweight himself.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I'm not saying go balls to the wall and, you know, 5 minutes or less, you're getting him out of there. But I do expect, if Dracus is as prepared as I expect him to be, there's a good chance that that damage he's able to do is going to be much different than what Adesanya was trying to do with him. And so that's why I do give Dracus power. I think that's actually going to help him, the way he's been performing recently, to be able to overcome a challenge like a Strickland. Because I think if you start to work the other weapons, let's try to do some wrestling. Let's work some kicks in. Let's not worry about, you know, maybe try to pitter-patter, stick and move. Maybe just kind of make it dirty and take the fight to him a bit. I could see a Dracus getting it done. Now, mind you, you can't eat unanswered shots. Sean Strickland, case in point, first round out of Adesanya, could beat you there. But I could see a Dracus taking that route to victory. And then finally, you know, I think that first 10 minutes, Sean has to be very perfect. Last 15, I think Dracus just has to be smarter with his defense. I think he just has to conserve his energy. But I think that as long as he's managing himself well, he should just have to stay ahead of Sean. And if he's throwing enough shots, he should be able to do it. I think the trick is shot selection. Whoever has the best shot selection is going to win this fight, whether they're trying to finish or go to decision. So we'll go from there. All right. But yeah, I'm going Dracus Duplessis for the win in this one.
Okay.
And I'll say it. I know people have talked a lot about this, what the fighters say to each other. I would hope that, you know what, I just want a little bit back to normal. I hope Dracus, if win or lose, they come out and say, hey, bro, if I went too far, I apologize. I was trying to meet you in the middle when you came at me with the noise. And I'll leave it at that, because I really do feel like those two, it's like, I don't think they actually have personal beef with each other. They just both have what the other one. One, Dracus just wants what Sean has, and that's just the belt. And that's all it is to it.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, Natalie, after this super show, next week, no MMA, but I'm sure we'll have a lot to recap. And so, yeah, I'm just looking forward to that. We are back. Things are back on schedule. The holidays are over. This is where the fun begins, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.